This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, as well as right here in Lafayette, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'm very proud to welcome Iberia Bank as Discover Lafayette's premier sponsor. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered here in Lafayette. With 329 combined locations throughout the South, they offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Iberia Bank supports educational, cultural, and business development efforts that make a difference in the many communities they serve, including sponsoring this podcast. For more information, please visit iberiabank.com. Cherie Dastu-Cohen is our guest today. An award-winning journalist, she's the author of books of local interest, such as Haunted Lafayette, Louisiana, and Exploring Cajun Country, a tour of historic Acadiana. Cherie has worked for Variety Magazine in Hollywood, The Advocate in Baton Rouge, and Gambit Weekly in New Orleans. She currently writes freelance for many magazines, which include AAA, New Orleans Magazine, Louisiana Life, Country Roads of Baton Rouge, 337, and many others. She pens three blogs, Weird, Wacky, and Wild South, Louisiana Book News, and Haunted Deep South. For those hungry for a good love story, Cherie writes Cajun romance novels under the pseudonym Cherie Claire, and some of the titles include Emily, Rose, Gabriel, Delphine, A Cajun Dream, and The Letter. There's also the Cajun Embassy series, and I love these titles, A Ticket to Paradise, Damn Yankees, and Gone Pecan. Her most recent book, Ghost Trippin', released February 14th of this year, was the fourth book published as part of her Viola Valentine paranormal series. Cherie, I'm not sure that one show is enough to cover all your thoughts on travel, Cajun love, and ghosts, but why don't we give it a shot? Welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
I love the ghost trippin' because I tend to drop my G's, and I don't know if that's a Southern girl thing or just a Jan thing, but when I saw Ghost Trippin', I do want to say that there's no G.
There's no G.
So I was delighted when you reached out to me about the release of Ghost Trippin'. We had never met, but I knew your name, and when I started looking you up, you've written for so many periodicals. Would you take us back to the early days after LSU? What got you into writing?
Oh, goodness. I've been writing my whole life. I'm one of those crazy people. You know, when people tell me, do you ever have a writer's block? I'm like, no.
You never do?
Never have enough time is a problem. I don't know. It's like something going on in my head that's just got to come out.
Yeah.
But when I got out of LSU, I really wanted to go into screenwriting, which is something I have not done. And it was, I went out to California because my sister was living in Burbank and took some classes.
Yeah.
I worked as a temp, actually, which got me in the studios, and that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But it was very intimidating. Hollywood's very intimidating for someone like me who's a bit of an introvert. So I veered off into novels, and that's where I've been ever since.
I think I read in your bio that you were in the grocery store, and tell us about that.
Yes.
Like, what was the prompt for the novel writing?
When I was in college, I had a roommate who read, voraciously read Harlequin novels, and these were the old Harlequin novels. And
like
so,
Fabio?
Before
Fabio.
The little tiny ones. And she's like, you have to write these. You can knock these out. And so I remember picking one up, and it's very purpley prose. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I don't think so. And, you know, I was a bit of a snob. And then after my first son was born, I didn't have time to read great literature. And I was in the grocery store, and I saw Harlequin. And these were the more modern Harlequins, mm-hmm. and had a journalist on the cover. And I was like, all right, I'll try this one.
Yeah.
And they were really good.
Did you buy one to read it?
People really don't realize that the whole industry went through a big transformation. And some of them are excellent.
Okay.
And then I thought, I can do this. I'll just knock these out. I didn't realize how hard it was. It's very difficult, very competitive.
And to get published, is it difficult?
It was very difficult. But I joined Romance Writers. I took classes. I went to conferences. And after about 8 years, I guess, I finally got one published.
And what was that, your first book?
First one was called A Cajun Dream, and it was supposed to be the novelization of Jolie Blonde. And that was my title, Jolie Blonde. And my editor was like, you can't have French on a title. Unbeknownst to me, the rest of the world doesn't know anything about French except us. But so we changed. It became A Cajun Dream, which is not my favorite title. But
you have to go with what the market is bearing. And I have a question for you. You grew up in New Orleans.
I did.
I knew your brother back when I worked at the Capitol, Quentin Dastugue. And when I saw your name, I thought it's got to be the same family. You grew up in New Orleans, but do they consider themselves Cajun?
No, not at all. My family came directly from France to New Orleans. My grandma's side goes way back. And it's funny because I've got Cajuns all through my genealogy, but I'm not descended from any of them.
Right.
So technically, no. But I was always fascinated with Cajun culture.
Oh, and it's beautiful.
I love it over here. And I eventually moved here. And I've been here 15 years. So
you moved here after Katrina?
I actually moved here right before Katrina. I got a job at the Advertiser, and which was lucky because my family had a place to evacuate to.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Well, I don't even know which genre. Maybe we can start first with some of your freelance writing, because I know I looked at your blogs. I looked at the Lafayette Travel site. You write recommending that people go travel to certain getaways. You write about local culture, and I know you write, like, Country Roads is a beautiful magazine. You've written so much that talks about South Louisiana and I guess the Gulf Coast region. Would you share some of that with us?
Sure. Well, I worked in newspapers for a long time, and then actually it was Katrina that made me decide to go freelance. I got a job for 2 years doing hurricane recovery work part-time for the Unitarian Church. They needed someone to help coordinate volunteers coming in. And I freelanced on the side. And then after the 2 years was up, I just became full-time freelancing.
Right. What is that like?
I mean, it's
constantly,
that's crazy.
like what you were going through out in Hollywood, how you have to constantly pitch.
You do.
Ideas.
It's a lot better than that. I hadn't made a lot of contacts in my career, so it wasn't too difficult. It's a tough life. And writing is not the best paying profession, but I love it. I love working for myself. But it's a little scary. I have people tell me, oh, I could never live without a steady income. I'm like, well, then you can't freelance.
Right. Because
you never know
when
things are coming in. But it's fun.
Right.
I like it. I like what I do.
And the way that the industry has changed, really, you were well-positioned to stay relevant and not be dependent on that paycheck, you know, learning
That's
how
true.
To freelance.
So. I write for a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. And so if one person falls off the wayside, you know, I've got others, which is helpful.
Looking through your site, I mean, you have you get to travel to the beach and different beautiful places and write about it. How does that work? Are you put up and
it's lovely. It's
they
a great,
pay your expenses.
They do. They fly you or you drive there. I do some on my own. Some like I just came back from West Tennessee. I went to Memphis and did some other towns, and that was a press trip. So they flew me there and they put you on a van. They do everything for you, and it's lovely. But you rarely have time to yourself. You might have an hour at night when you get into the hotel room. So it's not a vacation.
Right.
So it is work. It's a lot of fun, but it's definitely work.
Right.
And it's exhausting, actually. But I love it. I mean, it's traveling is what I love to do.
Right. Right. Well, I'm really interested in your blogs, especially Weird, Wacky, and Wild South. So talk about that, please, the kind of things that you write about.
The South is my niche. You know, I have a lot of friends who travel, and when we get together, they're always like, I'm going to China. I'm like, I'm going to Gulf Shores.
Yeah.
But I'm happy going to Gulf Shores. It's the South is great, but everywhere I go, especially Mississippi, it's just crazy things. People are wacky and wild
are
and
they?
Fun.
Now, is Florida
very
part
interesting.
Of, is Florida part of your South?
You know, I do
like the Florida Man kind of stories, you know, the... You know what I'm talking about?
Florida Man?
I was reading recently about, I've heard about weird stories coming out of Florida. When I read this, I thought maybe you had some of those. But about combinations of events that happen in Florida where people have either guns and reptiles or just crazy things.
That's very true.
Yeah.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
But I don't know if they call it Florida Man. But so you pick up stories when you travel. You just hear about
things. I do.
That's
how I started the blog, because I would like, I can't really use this for the story I'm working on. I'm going to put it on a blog.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's fun.
Right. And then what about Louisiana Book News? You cover other local writers?
That was a column I started at the Advertiser when I first started there, because I wanted to make sure that authors had a voice, and I want to promote literacy because our state could use a little help in that area.
Right.
And so that's how that started. And it was in the Advertiser and the Monroe papers for a long time, but they just recently cut it due to budget cuts because you know, the newspapers are
of course
scaling back. But it's still a blog, so if anybody wants Louisiana Book News, it's online.
So we can just Google that. Just type that in, and your blog comes up. I know you have
several. Yeah, that's a labor of love.
Yeah, well, I get that. But you have several websites. And the last one, Haunted Deep South, that's another blog that you have. Is that an offshoot of some of your writing, your novels? Or?
It is. I wrote Haunted Lafayette with the History Press. It's a collection of stories of haunted Acadiana. And I've done haunted stories at newspapers over the years. And so I just like ghost stories. And it was something I couldn't use in a story I was working on. So if I went someplace and there was a ghost story, I would put it on the blog. And it's just for fun, really.
Do you hear many ghost stories in your writing? We were talking before the interview started, and I don't know much about ghosts. But I'm open to, you know, I know, I guess it's called paranormal activities, but you would hear about things in your writings. Could you talk about some of that? When did you start making connections or hearing about ghosts?
I started when I was with Gambit New Orleans. That was one of my first jobs. They asked me to do a ghost story for it was something in October, and I did, and I really enjoyed it. And so the following year, I did one on haunted restaurants, which was really interesting. And then I just kept going. And then when I got to the Advocate, let's do
they
some ghost
it,
stories.
Huh?
Yeah.
So I guess it's fair to say that no matter where we go, probably somebody can share a story about a ghost or what they think has happened.
Absolutely. You'll find them everywhere.
Yeah.
You'll be very surprised.
Well, one of the books that we have here at the table is called Haunted Lafayette, Louisiana, which you were just mentioning. And you've got a collection of stories about local places where I think one of the stories said the guests that would never leave. It was set in the Crowley area. But tell me about this book, please. Did this take much to compile, or was it relatively easy to find stories or, you know,
yes,
sharing?
It was some of the stories in there. One of them is an excerpt from Country Roads, the story I did for them on Tea Frères.
Right.
Which is probably the most famous one in the area.
Moggy and Pat Pastore's place that they used to have, yeah.
Which has got great stories and continues to have great stories. But there was a few others that I had done for other people, and then I just added to the whole collection. I had heard, for instance, that the old opera house in Crowley was haunted. So I went over to Crowley and I interviewed the owners. And what really is interesting, and this happens over and over again, is people will say, well, I haven't seen anything. And I always think, well, maybe there's nothing here. And then they'll talk for 2 hours and they'll talk about all the weird things they've heard or other people have seen. And that story led to the Rice Theater, which led to the music store. So by the end of the week, I had several places in Crowley that were haunted.
Wow.
So Crowley is a good place to go ghost hunting.
So I'd recommend people buy your book, Haunted Lafayette, Louisiana, because, I mean, it's just a treasure trove of stories. But it's something that if you've not experienced unusual activities like that, it's just hard to believe.
True.
Because probably most of us haven't. But then once you start hearing people talk and you hear the coincidental things that different people say, it's intriguing, especially Tea Frères.
Yes.
We had Moggy and Pat on the show several months back, and I didn't know much about the ghost stories, but they were like, oh, yeah, you know, they'd hear sounds in the pantry and different things that would happen. So,
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Now, what about, ghost tripping while we're on the paranormal discussion? You've got four books that you've printed, and what brought about Viola Valentine? What What prompted you to write this series of stories?
Well, she goes through Katrina and comes out a different person and decides to change her life. And kind of the same thing happened to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to write romance after Katrina. I didn't really have the heart to do it. I mean, it's, you got to have a happy ending. And it's not that Viola doesn't have a happy ending, but it's a lot different. And I thought, well, and the other thing too is I started becoming a travel writer, and I would go, I would leave here and go to a place where they would wine and dine you and put you mm-hmm. up in a nice hotel. And I, it just felt so strange living in a disaster zone, in a sense. And even in Lafayette, we were affected.
Right.
And then going somewhere else and realizing that everybody else was just normal. Right. And I thought, what if this character went through the same thing? And I started developing her. She actually evacuates to Lafayette and gets an apartment here when she leaves her husband. So this is her home base, I guess to say.
So her life paralleled yours.
A little bit,
pretty
yeah.
much, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not 30, unfortunately, but...
Well, I know. That's what fiction's about, so...
Right.
Well, I want to hold that thought, and while we take a break, I just want to thank Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. Ben Berthelot and his staff have been so supportive of Discover Lafayette's podcast, and I know that you've done a lot of writing for Lafayette Travel. I've seen some of your travel articles, so I just wanted to take a moment to thank them for helping us keep this show going. So, Viola Valentine, you've got four different novels. Would you kind of go through some of the different stories without giving away all the plot so that people who are interested might want to find out more about that series of books?
Sure. Viola she gets pregnant in college and gets married. And as long as, you know, when the baby's born, everybody's happy. But when the child dies of cancer, she dies of leukemia, the marriage falls apart. So in the beginning of the first book, I mean, it's not as sad as it's, it is sad, but it's not as sad as it sounds.
They sound upbeat, the books themselves are
right.
upbeat, yeah.
But she decides to leave her husband and branch out on her own and become a travel writer. And so each book, each of the first five books are stages of grief, because not only does she getting over Katrina, but she's also facing up to the death of her daughter. So she comes out of it in the fifth book, which I'm writing right now. In the fifth book, it's acceptance, because you get to the end of the grief cycle and it's acceptance. So it kind of comes full circle. Whether I continue the series or not, I'm not totally sure.
Right.
I probably will, because I'm really in love with these characters. They've been a lot of fun. And they're all quirky people, especially our New Orleans family. And
yeah, it sounds like a Netflix series, though, where you watch one, and then you got to watch all the, you know, the different years and episodes. So you've got four that have been published.
Yes.
And then working on the fifth book. So
and there's a lot of ghosts in them, because that's a mystery. But there's a lot of also, because it's tied to water, there's a lot of mythology, and because there's a lot of fun stuff tied to around water.
Mm-hmm.
Mythology people, there's a lot of spiritual thought about water, how it's a conductor to ghostly activities or, anyway, I could go on and on about water.
No, I like that. So was this in your mind after Katrina? Like, did you start doing research on this?
Actually, yes, because I kept having these dreams about water. And I remember asking, and it was very calm, but water everywhere.
Yeah.
Like I was not drowning in it, but just surrounded by water. And I talked to people about it, and they said it's a very spiritual thing to dream of water. So I started researching it, reading more about it. And it's interesting.
Are there any goddesses?
I mean, we're mostly made up of water,
right,
too.
Exactly. Are there goddesses associated with water? When you talked about mythology, who do you think of? Like, what?
There are sirens, and they're women who are goddesses of the, what's the word? Wells, springs.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the second book called Ghost Town in the Viola series takes place outside of Alexandria, Louisiana, which used to be an old spring up there. And so I went up there once and I thought, this is a good place to put a book.
So you're taking your travel background, you know, writing and incorporating it.
Yeah, she travels constantly in my books.
Yeah. This might be your alter ego.
It kind of is.
Now, she's a ghost sleuth, so that's part of the mysteries, right? The part of the book. So can you talk about that some, you know, like a ghost sleuth? What How is that woven into the stories?
Well, and yes, I guess it does parallel me a lot, because when I do these stories about ghosts and people say, well, I have this ghost in my house and we call her Carol and la, la, la. And I'm thinking, why Carol? And who was Carol? And I'll try to, especially with my haunted book, the nonfiction, I tried to find who these people were, try to find some kind of
were they real
factual
people?
Basis. Yeah. And sometimes it didn't. Sometimes, like the Bertels, for instance, I've never been able to see anything backing up about the slave. And, you know, I don't know if you know the story.
No, tell us, please.
There was a slave that lived there who, I think, in a jealous fit, I forget the details exactly, but she tried to make the mother of the house and her children sick. So she made her a tea with some poisonous leaves in it, and she actually killed them. That's the story. Mm-hmm. And they
that's the truth.
Oh, like I think what story. Happened was she was listening in on the family, and they caught her, and they cut off her ear, and to retaliate, she did this. And then they ended up killing her.
Wow. So she's still haunting
the place. But I've never found anything on that. So, and I spent the night there once to do a story.
And you didn't hear any strange...
I didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
But that's not to say it's not haunted.
Right.
Because I've had people say they've had weird experiences there. But I like to try to find the facts behind the stories.
Right. You know, after we spoke by phone when we first introduced each other, you know, to ourselves, I was fascinated with this because I guess I've just led a sheltered life, but I just had never studied or thought about ghosts. And then... I began thinking there's so many things that we just don't know. You know, we see we see the physical world, but we're all created and we weren't a part of that, and we're not a part of how the sun and the moon and, you know, everything revolves. So I just found it fascinating. And I like that you wrote these books in an upbeat manner where people can be exposed to new thoughts but also have fun, you know, while they're reading. So
well, I hope so.
Yeah. Kudos to you for all of this. And your other series of books, which I just love the thought, Cajun romance novels. And this, I know you've got two. You've got them now in book series where people can buy them.
Yes.
I think you've got the, you write under Cherie Claire, as I said, and you've got one set with all the ladies' names, and then the Cajun Embassy series with different titles. What got you to write these Cajun romance novels?
Well, it goes back to that first Harlequin I read. And the funny thing was, I was living in California at the time, and Lonesome Dove was on TV.
Right.
So I thought, I'm going to write a Western. And I don't even like Westerns. So what in the world was I thinking? I don't know. And it was a terrible book.
Oh. Well,
but it took me a long time. And it was my practice novel. Yeah. And it took me 5 years to work on that. But I once I did that, I got it. I got down that structure to a novel.
Right.
And then one night, I just had this dream. I remember waking up and just seeing this story go across my head, thinking, oh, I'm never going to remember this. I need to write this down, but I didn't. But I woke up the next morning, and I remembered it, and that's what became my first published novel, The Cajun Dream.
So it came to you. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it was, yeah, it was great.
I always wondered about that, you know, like writers of songs, writers of words, you know, novels. Do you think it's delivered to you?
I kind of do, yeah. Because a lot of times when I'm like, I'm not sure what I'm going to write today, I just kind of give it up and say, help. Yeah. And I just start writing. And then I'll go back later and say, wow, where did all that come from?
Yeah.
So yeah, I do. I think creative forces, it's kind of like ghosts, I guess. You don't can't see it, you can't explain it, but I believe it's there. I believe something's there.
I do, too. I know when I'm really blocked, I don't write like you do, but when I have to write short things, even getting ready for the show here, or messages I have to deliver, I'll just ask for a moment of silence and let my mind clear, and things do come.
Yeah, I definitely recommend that for anybody who wants to do something creative and they're having a hard time.
You have to get out of your own way, though.
Yes,
to let the message be heard. So some of these, I love the names of the Cajun Embassy series, Ticket to Paradise, Damn Yankees, and Gone Pecan. I mean, who doesn't say that around here? These are Southern terms, but most of these young women have gone off somewhere, right? Like one of them went off to California, Hollywood, and they end up meeting men. And can you talk about some of that? Like what motivates the young women in these novels?
The first, the big series, the one with all the women's names, that one I sold to Kensington, and that was a historical romance. So that was all set way back when. Mm-hmm. The Cajun Embassy is modern. And so the first one, yeah, there's three women who go to journalism school in Columbia, and they're homesick. And one of them's making a pot of gumbo, and that's how they meet. Because you know, if there's gumbo cooking, you're going to find
it. Right. Love and gumbo. Yeah, you know.
Right. So that's how they meet. But one ends up in California. GambaCon takes place in Lafayette.
Oh, it does?
It does.
Yeah.
Damn Yankees is more of a Southern woman who kind of inherits Yankee Magazine, which is not called Yankee Magazine in the book.
Right.
But it's like that magazine. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a play between a real New Englander with a thick accent and someone from Georgia with a thick accent. Her mother was Cajun.
Have you ever read your novels? Are they books on tape where you've read the
No,
stories?
I haven't. I got a grant this past year. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Art Spark
yeah.
from the ACA and Lead. Yeah, very nice. But they gave me money to hire someone, and I hired two local people. So my novella, The Letter, is a historical romance. That one is available. And the first Viola book is available.
On tape?
On tape.
Where would people go to get that?
Well, Amazon has both of them now. Okay. I'm working to get other people to pick them up.
Yeah. But, I'd like to hear you read, too.
Really?
I think so. Because you would be the character, you know? I mean, you would be, as the writer, yeah, I think you'd be great at reading.
Oh, well, you're sweet.
Yeah.
See, I majored in print journalism, so I was always like,
I think you should go with it. You're really good at
well,
this.
That's sweet of you.
Yeah. Are there any other writings that I, you know, genres or anything that I didn't pick up on, Cherie, that you would like us to know about in your body of work?
No, pretty much I did. It's funny because I love writing my novels. And for a while, and this actually happened after Katrina too, I veered off into nonfiction. And it was a lot easier to sell. And so it was fun to do. But so I enjoy both of them.
Right.
So people always ask me that, you know, what do you enjoy the most? I love my travel writing, but I also love my fiction. So I don't know. I thought every once in a while I think about those screenplays, but...
Yeah, you never know.
I don't know if I could tackle Hollywood.
I don't know. You could probably get someone. My youngest daughter wants to be a screenwriter.
Really?
And she's not shy. Kelly could go out with you to Hollywood. And
gotta
I think y'all would
skin.
Be unbeatable, the two of you together. But she could knock on the doors and you could make the pitch. So
that would be great.
We're here with Jason Sikora from Raider Solutions. And Jason and you have a lot in common. You both lived out in the Burbank, you know, the Hollywood, California area.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been busily writing notes. I know you've got some questions.
Well, we could do a whole podcast on ghosts and meditation and all that stuff. We talked a bit beforehand, and we're going to talk a bit after as well, because I have a few more things. But you mentioned that you wanted to be a screenwriter and that you haven't really done that yet. Is that something that you might get back into?
Actually, I wrote a screenplay for the Disney Fellowship way back when. And I didn't get the fellowship, obviously, but I turned it into a play that I read at Cité when they had the one-act play festival. It was like a stage reading. That's still in the back of my mind, I guess. I would love for Netflix to make my Viola books into a series, but I don't know if I'm capable of doing that.
Well, that was my next question was, do you think your novels... You might want to turn those into screenplays, like the Viola series.
That would be awesome. I would love it. I actually write like a screenplay. Right? I mean, I write novels that way because I'm very visual. So I'm
picture the actors. Like
yes, and there's a lot of action or in.
Yeah.
Into, so I think when you read my books, I think you visualize it easier than. I don't. I'm not James Lee Burke. I wish I was in many cases, but but he's brilliant with descriptions. But I think my books are more. Popular fiction focus, you know, it's a good book to read on a plane.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The whole process from writing the first line to actually getting it published, what's the hardest part? Is it the writing, the editing, the publishing, the...
The writing to me is the easiest part, hands down. I mean, getting it published, going through all that, going through the editing process. And a lot of times, you know, because my Viola series, actually, I did as ebooks, and so you have to hire someone to do the covers. You have to get the ISBN numbers. You have to put them up on all different bookstore fronts mm-hmm. online, and everyone has a different formatting process. It's incredible. It's been a lot of fun in some senses.
That's frustrating, right?
But
you've got the work completed.
So much work. Oh, my goodness.
It's not, if they can't find it or download it or whatever people do.
Yeah.
You know, it's depending on their choice of reading.
Yeah, and then you get, and then you have to go through the wonderful reviews that come in. And I've been very lucky. I'm not complaining. But every once in a while, you get someone who'll say something mm-hmm. kind of strange, and you can't ever say anything back to them. Like, no, that's not what's going on here. But
yeah,
yep.
Anyway, I bet the research.
It's just
though,
interesting.
Cherie, the research for some of these books has got to be a killer to get ready for the writing.
Yes, it is. I do a lot of research, but mm-hmm. I really like the research part. I like the writing and the research. Mm-hmm. The rest of it's kind of hard.
So, and then I'm still fascinated. Like, what drew you to ghost stories? Was it just something that fell in your lap, or was it something that, like, you were drawn to when you were asked to do this?
I think I was always fascinated. I was drawn to it because I kept getting asked to do it for the papers I wrote for. I always wrote features.
Okay.
You know, I'm mm-hmm. I'm the fluff side of journalism, and which I'm not gonna. Feel embarrassed about. It's what everybody wants to read.
Fair enough.
Besides sports.
Fair enough.
But it was just something I was always drawn to, I guess. It's fascinating. The whole, mm-hmm. A lot of things are fascinating to me, though. I mean, there's a lot of spiritual things that interest
right.
me, too.
Right. Well, if you weren't open to it, you wouldn't have been mm-hmm. in a situation to even be writing about it, you know, the first time you were talking about in New Orleans. So.
And I'm not saying all of it makes sense mm-hmm. or some of them are believable, because there's some that, you know, there's a lot of things that people will...
They want to believe.
...show you a mirror and say, oh, it was distorted, and it's actually just age. You know, there's a lot of things you can really write off. And I think if you watch the paranormal shows on TV, they do that. They debunk a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But then there's the stuff you can't debunk, so...
What do you watch on TV? Like, what type of show would you recommend to somebody that doesn't know much about this?
I like Ghost Hunters, but I don't even know if they're still on. After a while, it got a little too.
But they've been replaced. There's something else on there. Yeah, something else on there now.
You know, one I really liked was it Paranormal Children? The one with Chip Coffee. Do you remember him? I really liked that show because these were kids that were growing up and they were very sensitive and they didn't know what to do with it, or their parents. Mm-hmm. Told them that, you know, they were wrong or it was the devil. So they go to meet with Chip Coffee, who's a medium, and he kind of talks to them and tries to explain what's going on, because
it gave them peace.
Yeah, because uh-huh. a lot of times too, some kids, there's stuff coming at them, they don't know how to turn it off.
They just don't know how to process it.
Right.
That makes sense. Finally, is there any websites that we need to plug? Like, where can somebody go to find out more about you, your books, your blogs?
Well, I'm a double-sided Cherie. So mm-hmm. Cherie Cohen is my day job name.
And let's spell that. C-H-E-R-E.
Yes.
And then last name C-O-E-N.
No H. Yes. And that's... And then my pen name is Cherie Claire, and Cherie is spelled differently. It's C-H-E-R-I-E-C-L-A-I-R-E.net.
Okay.
And the reason I have two Cheries is because my Cherie, my real name, has an accent on the end, and mm-hmm. it's not spelled correct French. My dad just thought it was cute the way it looked.
Yeah.
But my editor, who has a background,
parents, exactly. Right? Yep.
My editor's like, you can't have an accent on your name, and you spelled it wrong. And she actually was Acadian. Her family came from Prince Edward Island.
Oh, I see.
So, so I said, okay, I'll change it.
Right. It's like Shab, but Cherie, you know, with the E at the end. So, but there's a lot, Jason, when you pull up, if you type in any of these things, Viola Valentine, Cherie Cohen, I mean, so much comes up.
Oh, good.
Because I just Googled your name and several things came up backwards
awesome.
And forward. So
that's a lot of work, too, because you got to market everything.
You got to market it.
Even if you're published, so with a big name publisher,
that might be one of the harder things these days is keeping your name in the top. Mm-hmm. Top 10 Google results.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, I bet.
And I'm not in the top 10.
Well, thank you for being here. And Jan, thank you for letting me ask some questions.
Oh, yeah.
This is awesome.
Cherie Cohen, I am just thrilled to have you as a guest on the show. I hope to get to know you better. And what I really hope is that our listeners will look you up and discover some of these wonderful books. Not only do you write about the region, they can get to know the background, some of the historical facts that are important about Acadiana and the coast, but they can get to discover your beautiful writing. Appreciate you being on the show today.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for listening to Discover Lafayette. This show and all of our shows can be found on discoverlafayette.net. And please tell your friends about it. If you can get them to subscribe on their phones, go to your podcast app. You can go to Alexa, Google Play, anywhere that you get podcasts, including Apple. We'd appreciate the referrals. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift. Thank you.